Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast, where we do our best to help leaders go further faster. I'm Andy Stanley, and I'm excited about this month because I get to be the host, which means I get to ask the questions. And my friend Chris McChesney is back in the studio with me to continue our conversation about the four disciplines of execution, a book that's been out about 6-7 years, continues to be a bestseller. As we talked about last time, has impacted and is currently impacting our organization. And then I found out that Chris basically lives 25 minutes from here. I'm like, why have I not met this guy? Chris had an opportunity to address about 1,000 business leaders in our community a few weeks ago. He's talked to our staff, and I said, hey, we need to do a two-part podcast because there's just too much to talk about one time around. So, Chris, welcome back.
Thank you, Andy. It's great to be here.
As we talked about in the first episode, Chris is actually the global practice leader of execution for Franklin Covey, an organization we have all intersected with at some point in our careers. And he's one of the primary developers of the four disciplines of execution. For more than a decade, he's led Franklin Covey's ongoing design and development of these principles. And there's so much to learn. But what I want to do is back up just a little bit. And for our audience who did not listen to last month's podcast, in fact, I would just say to you, if you didn't hear last month's, please just hit pause, find the previous episode, listen to it first, and then come back to this one. But just a real quick catch-up for those of you who did listen, but it's been a while. There are four disciplines, and so, Chris, real quickly, just walk us through the four, and then we're going to take the conversation forward from there.
You got it. So this is really about applying focus towards a critical metric in the organization that's holding you back. One thing that would positively impact a lot of other stuff. The first discipline is called focus on the wildly important, and it is that discipline of defining the starting line, the finish line, the deadline. Think about translating a concept into a critical target or the fewest targets, you know, necessary to execute on that objective. That's discipline one, is really the focusing and targeting. Discipline two really is the principle of leverage, what we call act on the lead measure. And that is each team where work is being done, each team determining what are the one or two things that if we did regularly and could measure would be predictive of outcome success.
The lag measure.
The lag measure, right? What are the two? And what we call lead measures are defined in discipline two that would move the lag measure that was defined in discipline one. So discipline one and two set up each team's strategic bet. And then discipline three is just how you see it. It's the visual representation, and we call it keep a compelling scoreboard. And so many principles of game dynamics showed up just by accident when we started doing this.
Right.
And we started to really learn why and when people engage and when they don't engage. But the game, here's what we say, you don't have to call this a game. The more it feels like one, the better it works.
And we've experienced that here.
Yep.
Primarily because of the scoreboard, a weekly scoreboard where we all know how we're doing against the wildly important goal. And number four is?
Create a cadence of accountability. And that is, think about force against leverage. This is every week, those members of the team that own that scoreboard committing to a couple of things, each one that they're going to do that's going to drive that lead measure, that's going to move that outcome.
And in the book, you talk specifically about how that meeting operates. It's a different kind of meeting. It's a short meeting.
Yep.
It's a stand-up meeting.
Yep.
And again, the accountability is what makes that important. So that's kind of the framework. Before we jump into the specific content I wanted to talk about, I did want to ask you this question. You've been doing this for how many years? You've been teaching this?
18 years. 18. We've been on this topic, yeah.
Okay, so it continues to work.
And I have ADHD, which, you know,
yeah.
That's got to
say, a lot of focus.
That's a lot of focus for
yeah,
for me.
So you and your company have worked with enormous companies. Marriott's rolled this out. Comcast has rolled this out. You know, lots of big companies. What has been the biggest surprise? I don't know if that's a fair question, but again,
yeah.
You do the same thing over and over and over. Small companies, medium-sized companies, Fortune 100 companies. What's the surprise? What's the aha for you personally?
It's a great question, and I'll tell you, there's just one thought that is just when you say that, and it's this idea that the principles of execution turned out to be the identical principles for creating engagement.
Engagement with?
Of employees.
Oh, wow.
That the things that you do, focus, leverage, right? That translation and scope in discipline three, the accountability. All those pieces that you do to drive a result, when you do them right, you get this extraordinary pop in engagement. And we didn't know why. We just knew it was happening. And it wasn't until we started seeing this work that was done by Frederick Hertzberg in the 1960s on engagement. And Hertzberg said there's a whole bunch of reasons people will quit you. But those are not the same reasons they engage. It's like the opposite of the reasons they quit you won't create engagement.
Wow.
And this is a real, and he had two different lists. He had what he called satisfiers and dissatisfiers. And the dissatisfiers were, I don't like my pay, I don't like my benefits, I don't like my boss, I don't have a best friend. It's all the stuff Gallup talks about, a lot of it, right? Or dissatisfiers. And it correlates very nicely to turnover. And so when people try and improve engagement within the organization, they, I think, naturally focus on things that are associated, you know, exit interviews. Why do people quit? No. Hertzberg said it's not the same at all, and that there are only two things that really drive engagement. And these are his words, and then I'll give you our words, because we were working in parallel. We didn't know this research
existed.
That wasn't
even the goal.
No,
it was execution.
We never even said the word engagement when we started. Hertzberg said, are they making progress towards a meaningful objective? Like, they've got to be, and in our words, are they winning at something that matters? And so, we realized this after we'd probably seen it 20 times. And I think what threw us was it didn't show up right away. I think if we were seeing that pop of engagement right away, we would have known what was going on. But it was always this byproduct that would start to show up. And it's ironic when we talk to your team about 6 to 8 weeks into the process.
Yep,
that's all the leaders wanted to talk about. Yes, we love the results. We can't believe the engagement.
Well, that's at the end of our staff meeting with you a month ago. That's what I, if you'll remember, I stood up and I said, the thing that I'm most thrilled about is the fact that all of you seem so engaged in this. Because you can ask people to do things, you can pay people to do things, but you have no control over engaging them in it,
right,
or engaging their heart and their hands and, you know, their passion into it. And you could tell in the meeting, they're engaged. But again, it was a byproduct. But
right,
as a leader, I mean, that's almost as exciting to me as actually accomplishing.
We couldn't, in our case studies, we couldn't get the leaders to talk about the results. We'd have to keep reframing the question and starting the videos over, because all they wanted to do was talk about, we got union employees skipping lunch breaks, you know, that kind of stuff.
So to reframe this a little bit, so if you're just joining us, if you didn't listen to last month's podcast, or if you did, to reframe it this way, this is a conversation around executing strategy. It's not about coming up with strategy. There's a lot of books written on that. We've learned that at school. This is about executing, which is always the fly in the ointment. So if you're listening to this podcast and your felt need in your organization isn't so much execution, it's engagement. You're thinking, how do I get my people to engage? Because those words, again, you could fill in the blank with either one. Some people think, I feel the issue is execution. Others, it's like, I just can't fit them to engage in the goal. These four disciplines address both.
Right.
So this is a two for one. All right. That's a fantastic insight. So in the book, you talk specifically about these five stages of team or behavioral change. So let's talk a little bit about that, because getting people to change or to change behavior, even at work, is such a big deal. And, you know, everything rises and falls on what we do when we get there. So talk about these five stages.
So the first, you know, getting clear. And, you know, you used a word last month that sort of stayed with you. You talked about an execution plan. And I don't think we ever say that term in the book, because we always think about plans associated with strategy. But I got thinking about that, and I think that really fits. And I think if you had an—
You think you'll go back and rewrite the book now?
We are rewriting the book right now. We actually are working on it on 40X 2.0.
Oh, wow.
So, and there's a lot, believe me, there's a lot.
Well, you guys have learned so much.
Oh, yeah, and what people read wasn't always what we meant them to hear. So there was a missing
world. Welcome to my world.
When you said this?
Yeah, I'm like,
that's not what I meant.
Yeah. All right, keep going. All right, so getting clear
is just really translating strategic intent into actual targets.
Strategic intent to actual measurable targets.
Okay. Yeah, finish line, lag measures, and discipline one. So it's all about, it's one thing to say we're going to do this. It's another thing to say, what are we going to aim it at? Like, four disciplines of execution is not a macro operating system for your business. You got one of those or you'd be out of business or you wouldn't be functioning as an organization.
Right.
This is not that. This is how do we break a bottleneck? What are we going to aim this treatment or apply this treatment to? And that means what's the targets and the sub-targets? What are the teams going to target? This is all the work that you've done, Andy. The leading metrics, the lagging measures, if we got scoreboards, and it's not around everything. It's a slice aimed at something that, I'll tell you who used to talk about this. We had a lot of exposure to Tim Tisopoulos at Chick-fil-A.
Oh, yeah.
You do. When we were in our formative stages with this, and Tim kept asking the question.
He asked good questions.
He does, doggone it. He's a thinker. And he kept saying, where do we apply disproportionate energy?
Oh, wow.
Does a leader know?
On purpose,
deliberate disproportionate energy. That is the strategic question. Where are we going to apply that disproportionate energy? And I think it really influenced our thinking around that's really what these disciplines are for. Where a leader says, I know we have to do this, and I know we have to do this, and I've got all these operational realities that I have to maintain. But where am I going to play a little offense? Like, where am I going to go after something? What's our moonshot, right? And what are the fewest battles? And getting clear is about that. It's about defining what that is. But that's not execution.
Right.
That's just the execution plan.
And that's the meet and talk till you hit it and everybody sits up and says, and I remember in our discussion the day this happened, everybody was like, that's it.
Yep.
That's the one. Because we were working around two wildly important goals.
Yep.
And in one of the meetings, we decided, nope, if we do the one, the second one will come along, which
Excellent.
Is when you know you've hit
Yeah,
goal.
That's when you know
okay.
you hit pay dirt.
Yeah, yes, we found the leverage point. So,
and this is a lot more brain damage than people realize. Like, we'll work with an executive team for an entire day just mapping out, here's the war, here are the critical three battles, starting line, finish line, deadline, and here's how the eight functions line up to those battles. And you can't believe that's 8 hours of work, and holy cow, it is eight. And a lot of these teams will say that's the most valuable day they've spent as a leadership team.
And they, at the end of the day, they had a sentence.
Yeah, it looks like you could have written it
exactly.
on the back of an envelope in 30 seconds.
I say all the time, anytime you see somebody do something well and make it look easy, it's because they spent a whole lot of time getting there, because simple isn't simplistic.
No, anybody can do complex.
Yeah, true. Okay, so getting clear, that's the process. That's a lot of talking, a lot of wordsmithing, a lot of coming back together. We're not quite there yet. Number two is launch.
All right, so here was a wrinkle that we learned. And I try not to be too prescriptive about this stuff, because principles, they're universal and they can usually be applied in different ways.
Right.
But one of the practices that we're pretty prescriptive about, and I saw this in your organization, is that frontline leadership needs to own it and kind of finalize it and launch it. Every time we've launched this as a training and development
consulting
company,
yeah, right.
every time we've gone around that level of leadership,
yeah.
we pay the price.
Wow.
And so what we did is we stopped ourselves and we said, okay, there's a level of leadership in the organization, and everybody knows where this is. Like, if you're a leader, you know where this leverage point is. And you know, if we don't get this body of people, that horizontal slice of the organization, we don't have anything.
Yep.
And it's like the pivot point of the organization. And so what we had to do is we had to work with those folks. They would create a hypothesis. They would go back to their teams. They would launch it. They would let their teams have
And you would train them how to do
yes.
this. In the book, you talk about coming in behind to
yep.
say, we'll help you, but you've got to walk
They've
in and do
take
it.
Yeah. it. Yeah, they got to punch
We're
it in.
We're not coming that day.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so until the leaders did that, we were missing this level of ownership. And there's something about when you advocate, you own. And they it was almost like magic. And leaders that were very sort of resistant and hesitant, a week later, you would never have known that. And then there's another level of engagement around how they get the teams to engage. And if they do certain things, it won't be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you're telling the team is, hey, we're respecting the whirlwind. We're picking something we've already got to work on, but we're just going to apply some discipline to it. And it's not about the four disciplines of execution. It's about the goal.
Yep.
This is just a logical way to attack it. But the launch is going to come.
How important is it for people within a division or department or an entire organization to see that upper management or that specific point person is engaged? Because to me, it seems super important. But in our organization, that's very simple because we're all in one location and we can get everybody in the same room. How, you know, at a more complex organization, Marriott's done this, and huge organizations have done this, but how, again, people on the front line, that's one of the beauties of this strategy. How do they feel or know that, you know, somebody not just layers away, but states away is as engaged or committed? Have you seen anybody model that well?
So a couple things went through my mind, and it's funny you mentioned Marriott. When they launched this with their the Marriott Marquis in New York City,
yeah, they started with one hotel, right?
Yep. Well, there was a few, but this was a lot of spotlight was on the Marquis because it's the most profitable Marriott at the time. Bill Marriott himself would visit once a month. They didn't know when he was coming, just that he was. How'd you like to work under those conditions, right? And the general manager, Mike Stengel, I can't believe I remember that name. Great guy. This was back a ways. He was, it was when the Olympics were being held in Beijing, China. Yeah. And he had gone over to Beijing to watch the Olympics. He was calling in at 2:30 a.m. Beijing time to be on a wig session at the Marquee.
Wow.
Yeah, that was understood across the organization.
Well, that's legendary. That's symbolic leadership. And those stories circulate.
They
we are talking about it. So that's a great example.
Isn't that a good example?
Yeah,
that's
a real good
and
example.
And they ended up that year, it's a 20-year-old property that had all the best and the brightest that Marriott went through the Marquee. They ended up with the best guest sat, the highest revenue, and the highest profitability in the 20-year history of the property in that 1 year when they first loaded up 4DX.
And how long, and you may not remember this, how long between when they first engaged with the concepts and launch?
I mean, for somebody. That's good. So they exposed their general managers to it, and then they watched who raised their hand. They knew the Marquee was going to go because Stengel was one of the ones that originally saw it. But they watched about a half a dozen others raise their hand, and they piloted, and they just learned. And then they went through this process four times. They went through four rounds of pilots just learning. It's kind of what we were talking about before. Yep. The key to the many is the one.
Right.
And they just watched how it worked. And now we're 12 years with them, and they're one of the best implementing, one of the largest implementers, and it's just baked into their culture. This is not the franchise side. They're just getting started, ironically. This is on the Marriott managed side of their business. But so there's a great example of a leader, and there's lots of those that, and here's how we say it. It's not how you launch it, it's how you play it. They watch you and they read you like a book. If you can't fake this. If you're into it, they'll know, and it feels like a high stakes game to them.
Yep. So one of the challenges for our podcast listeners is to ask the question in light of the nature of your company, the rhythm of your organization, what you do. How do I? You say to yourself as a leader, not only do this. I forget who said it. It's a politician who said it's not enough in politics. It's not enough to do good. You have to be seen doing good. And that's very, it's very true. And so in this situation, it's not enough to do this. You have to be seen doing this because, again, it's symbolic leadership and it's authentic. So moving on. So, and we kind of jumped into this with the Marriott discussion. Adoption, stage number three is, so you're getting clear. We know the one or two things. We're going to launch this. And that includes all the wig gatherings. Yeah. And then number three, adoption. What is that?
So I got a funny metaphor for you for this one. This is adoption is where you're not pushing it anymore. They've got it. It's got mojo. Yeah. Like this thing's
rolling
like a flywheel.
This is what we do.
This
here.
Is what we do. Like that process that, we got a whirlwind like everybody else, but we've always got this intense winnable game going on inside of every team is a great way to look at this culturally. You know, 80% of our life is like everybody else's. But there's always a winnable game going on. That is really healthy for any culture, whether you apply the four disciplines or not. Just that. What we've learned about adoption to me looks like those little turtles hatching on a beach in one of those nature shows. You know that scene where all the little turtles hatch?
Mm-hmm. It's like,
they start booking it, and the seagulls start picking them off. And every time an organization launches this, all I can think of is like that little vulnerability period when the little turtle starts booking it for the water line. And they're really vulnerable. And what we say is that during this period of time, the leader's got to kind of own it, protect it. You got a month or two where you're really got to make sure that little turtle gets to safety. Mm-hmm. And what safety looks like isn't goal completion. It's the lead measure moving the lag measure. If you can get movement, if the bet starts to work, if they can get some degree of correlation, this thing catches a really big second wind. Hmm.
And that's the importance of the scoreboard.
Exactly.
Because we're looking
to see it.
Right. Yeah.
You can see it. And yeah, sometimes there's challenges and sometimes it doesn't happen right away. And sometimes teams say, yeah, you know what? We were better the second time because we really knew what this thing could do. Yep. But if you can get some degree of correlation, adoption is right there.
Yep. And this is maybe in too far afield for where we are in the discussion, but we talked about last time, and when you read the book, you can't help but bump into this. Teams don't always pick the correct lead measure to begin with, so you're pushing. We're doing what we said we would do, but nothing's happening on the other end. And then there's this period of time of, okay, we need to give it more time, or no, we need to find another leverage point. So, and part of that is part of this headed to the ocean part two, where the leader's like, no, we're not giving up on the process. We're going to stick with the process.
Yep.
We just need to drop those particular lead measures to figure out what is going to move this rock. And I think that more than ever is the critical time for the division, department leader, whoever it might be, because it's easy. I mean, we want quick results.
Yep.
I mean, we don't want to do something for 6 months. In our situation, because and every organization has a rhythm or sales cycle or whatever it might be. So we think in terms of the school year.
Sure.
Because that we start off big, and when school starts in August to May, vacation time, summer's kind of a lull, then here we go again. So we've basically run this through the fall. So we know what this looks like fall to fall, because for us, it's not week to week, it's more this week this year over this week last year.
Right,
Christmas, spring break. I mean, there's so many variables. So my challenge is to keep us laser focused until we get to that date, because, you know, things come and they go, and we've not had a full round of the season or the rhythm of our organization. So I feel like after a year of this, we'll know more than we know now. But at the end of the year, we may have to decide, you know what, those weren't the right lead measures. And it may take us a year, perhaps, to recognize that. So is that safe?
I can tell you, it is very common to hear leaders say, we really weren't good at this until the second round.
The second round of lead measures and
lag measures.
Right. And that makes sense based on our experience.
Right?
Because it's a bit of a guess, or we would have already been doing it, right?
And think about the nature of the treatment. Like, sometimes you don't really know what to aim it at. What is this good for? You know what this would be good for? This would be good for this. And I'll tell you where, right? Everybody's got to play around. You know, you hear college football coaches say, we make our biggest improvement between the first and the second game. Like, they got to get a game under their belt.
Yep.
However, I'll tell you what balances that out is the low-hanging fruit you get from round one.
Yep.
So a lot of times, the nature of the challenge, you can go after some stuff where you haven't put focus before, and sort of the focus alone carries you for round one, and then by that point, you're good at it, and that's a good scenario right there. But I really want to go back to something you said, Andy, which is, regardless of who you are and what you lead, there are elements that are non-negotiable that have to happen. There are elements in your whirlwind that cannot be missed on, that people have to adhere to.
Yep.
Right? They don't get it. Nobody gets a say in that stuff. They got to do it. There are other things where big money is spent and big decisions are made. And leadership is going, and leadership has very direct influence on those things. Then there's this other category of things where not much happens if the people don't care. Mm. And that's the land where this methodology lives. And a leader has to be okay with a little trial and error in this lane. The other lanes, when we're spending big money, when we're locking down processes, there can't be flexibility in certain aspects.
Yeah.
But here, this is this is an area where you want to give teams the liberty to try some stuff and say, look, maybe what we learn in the first month is that this assumption we've always believed isn't accurate and it's not predictive. Mm-hmm. Or right, but to the degree that they own that lane, mm-hmm. right? And this stuff is really good for things that a leader cannot get at with direct leadership muscle.
To that point, would you mind telling the story you told to our marketplace leaders who were with us last month from the community? You told a story about the shoe store.
Yeah.
And they were trying to find what's the lead measure, and they had a list of about eight
yeah,
or nine
it's a
things.
Great story.
And again, I'm not being in the shoe business, I'm sure if I'd looked at those eight things, I would have thought, no, that probably wouldn't make any difference at all. But again, it was the experimentation and being willing to
yeah.
be flexible that finally it was kind of the bingo, oh my gosh, this struck gold moment.
Really
so tell
point.
That story, yeah.
Because here's what you can't do. You can't just say to a team, what's your lead measures? They have no idea what you're talking about. They have no frame of reference for that.
So, and if they, once they choose them, they're not even sure they're the right ones yet.
Right. So what we say is give them your best thinking. So what this shoe store did was, like, they had one, everybody had the same wig, which was how many people that go into the store actually buy a shoe, buy transaction percentage,
yep.
right? And then they had eight possible answers for lead measures. Each store just picked two, and you picked off the menu, or you could come up with your own if you wanted to. And there were 4,500 bets. Like, that's how many stores were doing this.
Wow.
And so we had this wonderful sample size, but here was the magic. Within a month, we could see that one of those eight choices was red hot.
Because they all sort of chose what they thought would work.
Different ones,
right?
Yeah. So this little spattering of stores start to spike the lag measure, and everybody looks and they said they were all measuring kids' feet, right? It wasn't—
That was the lead measure.
Right, it wasn't—
Measuring
children's
feet.
And we had to watch it. Nobody understood why at first. And then we sort of thought through it, and it started to make sense the more we looked at it. But it beat out other lead measures, like if I show you one pair of shoes, can I show you another?
Mm-hmm.
And in stock, and yep. and in how quickly do we greet
the
people?
The things that would be more intuitive.
Intuitive. It wasn't intuitive at all. And it was this realization that nobody knows the size of their kids' feet. And they look like they're looking for shoes, but they're not. They're looking for those little scales to measure the kids' feet. And if you just helped them with that and got them talking, you're going to sell every time.
That's amazing.
But it was this great example. This is a big difference between knowing a thing, because they'd always known measuring kids' feet was a good idea, and knowing the data behind a thing.
And again, the point of bringing that up is when it comes to the adoption period.
Right.
If you give up too quickly— you throw out the process and you miss. Yeah. Okay. Moving on. Optimization. Stage number four.
Yeah. And I think we kind of hit that a little bit too. I think that's a little bit like that second round.
Gotcha.
And you're sticking
with the process,
yeah.
but you're playing with the lead measures.
And I want to go back to this leader at Marriott. Dave Grissen, he's the number two guy at Marriott right now behind Arne Sorensen. And he really made an impression on me. And he's been a good friend. And I mean, you're going to create an execution methodology, and Marriott's going to work with you. That's you've been living right. But here's one of the things I saw him do. He said to a group of leaders, "It's really cool." He said, "If you want to keep your jobs at Marriott, just take care of the day job. Just take care of the whirlwind. We won't fire you. We'd be crazy to fire you because the next person might not." And everybody knows something else is coming.
Yeah.
Right? They're waiting for the other shoe to drop.
However,
he said, "If you want to get promoted, give me one. Give me a wig. Give me a rival experience. Give me everything in working order. Give me
do something exceptional.
Yeah, yeah, give me a specific. Call your shot. Don't take credit for something afterwards. Call your shot." And this really became part of the culture. So you'd interview as a hotel manager to be a GM, and guess what? The first question they was going to ask you. Show us your wig.
Mm.
What did you do? What were your lead measures?
Yep.
I know you can maintain the business. Can you give me one?
Wow.
And everybody sort of got
and
that
by
was
one,
fair.
By one, he was talking specifically about a lead measure?
A wig.
A wig.
Give me a wig.
New wig or something?
Something for that property.
Gotcha. When you come in here, show me what you're going to do that's not being done.
Yeah.
Or at a different level.
Yeah, I know. Okay, you can keep the place from burning down and you can maintain
it. How are you going to make it better?
Right. Give me one wig that's going to move this organ, event satisfaction. There were lots of different ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
Occupancy rate. Give me a wig and show me that you can hit that and you qualify for promotion.
Wow. So that's optimization.
And that's right. Now it starts to bleed into the culture where they realize, yeah, I got two things going on here. I gotta maintain the day job, and then I gotta deliver something. And it's really good. It's a very healthy way to live.
So stage one's getting clear. That's a process, lots of talking. Number two is launch. Number three is adoption, where this is where it's new, it's tentative, it's, you know, right. It's a little bit fragile, but we're going to do this. Number four is optimization, where you're tweaking, it's becoming more part of the rhythm of the organization. And then the last stage is habits.
Yeah. So there, this is where, I'll tell you, what is it? This got attributed to Albert Einstein. There's a lot of quotes that get attributed to Albert Einstein. We don't know if he said it.
No.
But there, and I'll probably butcher it, but there was something about the idea that once a mind is exposed to a new level of thinking, it can't go back.
Mm.
And you know, everybody's seen this in some place or experienced this.
Yep.
Once
you can't unknow, you can't unlearn.
You can't unlearn certain things. You can't unring that bell. You got exposed to a leader, and like it or not, you've seen there's a better way to do it. You can't
leave. You are ruined.
You're ruined.
In a good way. Yeah.
Yep. And they just raised the bar for you. And once people feel that, okay, you know what? We really can land one plane at a time, in addition to holding down this fort, and it gets to the point where it becomes part of the culture. And culture is not just how we treat each other. Culture is how we work.
Yeah, one of the things that you said in one of our discussions was you talked a little bit about the correlation between the five disciplines and culture, because culture is such a big thing, but it's so intangible.
Right.
But again, just what we're seeing here, this strategy is shaping and influencing our culture in a positive way. So if you said to somebody, hey, go create healthy culture.
And you're not aiming at culture.
This is interesting.
It would be very interesting to think that he said that, meaning that his wildly important goal was culture. It cannot be culture.
Culture is a result.
It's got to be the byproduct of doing something meaningful.
That's always the case. Well, there's so much more. And if you have not read The Four Disciplines of Execution, by now I'm sure you've already downloaded it. You've pulled over. You haven't done that while you're driving. But you need to read this book. But
I have to warn you. From your lips to God's ears.
Yeah. But I have to warn you, this is not a book you read and go, oh, I read that book. This is a book that, again, this is why it continues to be a bestseller, because it is a strategy for execution. And all of us have goals and dreams and plans, and we're all pretty good at that as leaders. But getting it executed and getting it done, that's what the book's about. And Chris, your insights, in addition to what's in the book, are fantastic. And thanks for the investment you've made in me and our organization. And thanks so much for being a part of this podcast discussion.
Delighted, Andy. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us in this two-part discussion. Again, if you did not hear last month's discussion with Chris, please go back and listen to that. Again, get the book and go to andystanley.com. If you go to the website, you can find the Leadership Podcast application guide that goes with today's conversation. So if this is something you want to listen to as a team, the application guide will make that an even richer experience. And of course, be sure not to miss next month's episode of the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast.